Today on Locked On Rockies, lots going on in the minors, lots of things going on with Rockies prospects, so we had to call in the best.
You are Locked On Rockies, your daily Colorado Rockies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Rock on Rockies fans, welcome into the Locked On Rockies podcast for today, the second day. That's right, it's already September, the second day of September. And guess what, Rockies fans? You aren't alone today. We are joined by the one and only Lindsey Crosby of Locked On MLB Prospects. Are you surprised that it's already September?
Yeah, this week I have totaled everything as like August whatever. And then I didn't realize how many days August had.
Right.
And so I pulled an office and I scheduled everything for that last day of August, apparently. So
yeah,
it's been absolutely wild how fast we're going through this.
Yeah. And on top of an insane week for you, Lindsey. So we thank you so much for joining us here. Today's episode is brought to you by Vroom. With Vroom, you can buy a car entirely online and have it delivered straight to you. So you never have to go to a dealership again. So next time we need to buy a car, just grab your phone, go to vroom.com and check out thousands of great cars. Lindsey here joins us. And Lindsey, tell us what's going on in the minors. For those that don't know, myself, I hear the buzzwords, I see the stuff. What is going on in the minor leagues right now?
So, one, I woke up Monday morning to pandemonium. My phone exploded overnight. So, late Sunday night, ESPN reported that the MLB Players Association had sent out to every single domestic minor leaguer, so close to 5,000 people, what are called authorization cards. And what this card is the player signs it and sends it in saying, I want the MLBPA to represent me as a union. So first step in unionizing the minors, the two options you have here with these cards going out is if you get at least 30% of them back, this is the PA gets them back signed, they can take them to the National Labor Relations Board, the government agency that oversees unions and collective bargaining, and say, we need to hold a union election. And NLRB will certify it. They'll make sure that, you know, everybody that signed a card is actually an active player, that kind of stuff. And then they'll schedule an election. What the Players Association's trying to do is have such an overwhelming percentage of cards come in signed. I mean, like they're shooting for 75% that they can just skip the election and voluntarily ask Major League Baseball to acknowledge them as a union and begin collective bargaining. Lot of layers to this. I did a whole show on Tuesday if your listeners want to go back and hear all about this and all the different layers. But long story short, this is the first step to having a union for minor league players, which means finally being able to address pay disparities, travel conditions, all of those things that we've complained about for weeks and months and years, finally getting those addressed via contract negotiations.
Is it getting too ambitious? Are they being too ambitious with that 75% goal? I mean, I sit here and say, though, I got to imagine there's a lot of players that want to be a part of this process, whether they're voting, whether they're voting two or four. I think at least they want they want their voice heard, even if it is this small thing. And even if they might not want to be a union, they still want to hear their voice heard. So I imagine that 30% isn't going to be too hard. 75% still seems pretty high. What is that over? That's over 4,000 of those 5,000 sent yeah. out at that point. So are they being a little overambitious with that 75%?
So you don't have to have a strict 75% to do it. That's just kind of their internal goal and what they're going for. But I do think the timing's really interesting. So the way that it works, the certification process through the NLRB is not a very fast thing. It's a government agency. And so if you don't get an overwhelming majority back, you know, something like a 75%, then you run into a scenario where it's low enough where Major League Baseball can say, we have an election. And obviously, the time it takes to coordinate something like that, you actually can't even have an election until at least 13 days after you've submitted the petition to NLRB. So we're already in September, as we talked about earlier. It would be something where you'd have to push the election back to probably the earliest you could do it would be spring training. And if when that happens, there's an argument that MLB can make about, well, so many players have left baseball and so many new players are in baseball over the offseason that you need to do the process of the cards again. So there's a little bit of a risk as far as waiting so late in the season to do it. But at the same time, most unions don't go ahead and send out the cards unless they have a pretty good idea they're going to get most of them back. And Advocates for Minor Leaguers has done a ton of work for years now, talking to minor leaguers, being present in every clubhouse, at spring training, at the draft, and making these players aware of these things. So I'm pretty confident that they already know around within about 5% how many cards they're going to get back.
What does this mean for labor talks going forward? I mean, we just went through an off season of a lockout. We had all that, and that was just, there was obviously talk for minor league players, I would say more than we've heard. But if a union vote is held and the new CBA agreement's coming up, how much more of a voice will minor leaguers have in those type of negotiations? Obviously, you would imagine that this will benefit some of the stuff, but big picture, I'm talking on that level, does that give minor leaguers a seat at the negotiating table when CBAs come expire and need to be talked about again?
Very good question. They're actually, so the way it works is minor league players and major league players would be in what's called separate bargaining units. So they have their own CBA. You'd have a major league CBA, which they negotiated this spring. You'd have a separate minor league CBA. Now, the Players Association would be the organization representing both groups, negotiating both CBAs, but they are technically separate contracts. I was surprised how much attention was paid to minor leaguers in the most recent CBA, because that's really the first time you've ever seen anything about minor leaguers in there. But this is something where there is a small possibility that a lockout could or a strike could happen if negotiations were to break down. But this would be a separate CBA, separate from what the major leaguers did, but probably, and if it was me, probably on the same time frame, so that they both get renegotiated at the same time.
And so if the vote passes, let's say the minor leaguers, is this the step in the right direction? I mean, the unions buzzwords, some people, you know, the power of unions can be really influential, and we see it in sports. Absolutely. I mean, how does this change the life of minor league baseball players if they do indeed decide to go with the union? I think that's, there's a lot that, of layers, but is this, would it address the pay, the travel, the stuff that's really like, come on, seriously, we're having these athletes do this stuff?
So here's how small the money is that we're talking about for these players when it comes to pay. So your pay scale, depending on what level you are, A, AA, AAA, you make either $500, $600, or $700 a week. For your entire organization for the course of the season, it's just under $1.5 million to pay every minor leaguer their salary right now.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's not much. If you were to increase every single minor leaguer to making $35,000 a year, you would go from $1.5 million to $6.3 million. Like, the Rockies paid more than that for Chris Bryant on the injured list. Mm-hmm. I mean, you pay, that's one veteran leaguer in your bullpen every year. If you were to pay every minor leaguer $50,000 a year, it would be a total expenditure of $9 million. So most organizations that run a six-figure payroll, like $100 million payroll or something like that, this is a drop in the bucket. And so MLB could have fixed all of this with each team spending somewhere between $5 and $10 million. Like, that's it. If they would have done that up front, none of this would have happened. But they didn't do that. And so now we're in a situation where they're unionizing, and they're probably going to get more than that because you force them into this situation.
Yeah, I mean, the union's going to give them more power, especially if they have the Players Association as the back. I mean, they are the Players Association, fresh off of fighting the owners, and I think fighting is the right term to use there after the contract or the CBA stuff from this offseason. I mean, it's going to be a huge resource and a huge ally for minor league players to have when negotiating things like that. And it's something that I got to say I'm for. It's just unbelievable what minor league ball players go through. It's unbelievable that when you're talking about what it is to provide, I mean, you mentioned even making a ball players have $35,000 a year. That's not even livable wages in some places, but that's still better. and it still gives you more opportunity and covers you more in the offseason, or a little bit makes you able to afford a little bit nicer things, which makes you a better ball player. I just really don't understand why it takes this for us to say, maybe we should not have our minor league players share a one-bedroom apartment with five people in it.
Yeah, that's the thing that's never made sense to me. If I owned a baseball team, you know, and there's not many of these people around, but if I owned a baseball team, the first thing I would do would be to put about $5 or $10 million more into my minor leagues. I'd pay them all good wages. You know, I would just do so many things, understanding. And if you look at it, it almost sounds kind of cynical, but if you think about it, really, those minor league players are investments in the quality of your big league ball club.
Exactly.
And so, you know, treat them like investments, treat them like people. You're going to get a much better product out of the end. And I just have never understood why teams have been reluctant on a large scale to do that, unless it's some sort of pressure from the other that don't want to do it. We've seen some teams take small steps. The Cubs did a thing this offseason where they brought in a lot of their top prospects in the offseason, paid for their room and board, paid for their food, paid for their training. Most MLB players on average rack up about $280 a month in training costs because they don't have paid for training during the offseason either. So I've seen teams take small steps, but I don't understand why some team hasn't yet just said, we're going to just pay these guys and treat them like the investments they are, so that our big league club has a better product. I've never understood that.
Especially the training. What on earth are we doing here? Why are you not providing training for your minor leaguers? Why would you not want your people training your prospects to play ball your way? That's the whole plan. And then that way, when they come up, we're not kind of just what if. They know they've been, the Rockies example, if they have been through this, if they have talked to ownership and they invest in them, they kind of feel a little bit more like they're part of the Rockies, like they're part of the system, like their owner truly believes in it, because the grind of the minor leagues is already so hard enough to get the shot up and down. Maybe you're traded a few times. You're a high prospect that's not breaking out there and is going to get moved around. The training, especially why you would not, that wouldn't be a thing you would pay for is beyond me. And don't make the mistake of paying for a DUI ticket, because it's never okay to drive stoned. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. It's never okay to drive stoned. You put yourself and others in dangers. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. Do you think it's okay to drive stoned? The truth is, your reaction time slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Stop kidding yourself. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI.
That was funny.
And yes, that's it's an interesting ad to have in here of an interesting transition here. But Lindsey Crosby joins us here. You can follow Lindsey if you want to learn more about the union, dive more into what that means for minor league players. Go check out Locked On MLB Prospects, the episode he just did this past week on Tuesday, August 30th. They're diving into everything the union for more there. Because I'm gonna switch gears here with you, Lindsey. Rockies call up one of their top prospects, and I love the move just because the Rockies should be seeing what they got from everybody in the system. Mm-hmm. It's a little tough because they didn't move anyone on the deadline. They still have these vets. They're kind of figuring out what they're doing with. Rockies call up first baseman, quote, the best first baseman the Rockies have had since Todd Helton, the big sports buzzwords. And if you're talking Todd Helton and first base and Colorado Rockies, that's going to get people pumped. What have you seen? What do you think of Michael Toglia? And what do you think of the call-up here for the Rockies?
So, one, got a home run off the Braves. Good job there. That was
Braves, right? You're a Braves guy, aren't you?
I'm a Braves guy. You can't see it right here. It's a Braves World Series thing up on the wall. Ended up not being enough, but you know, great home run. No, as we've gone through the season, you know, the story behind Michael Toglia has been he's got the power. He plays a good first base. He strikes out too much, right? And as we've gone through the season, I've watched him gradually getting better. His batting average has gotten better just about every single month. His strikeouts have come down just about every single month. So we've seen the positive progress that we're looking for. It's been small, but it's been there. So like April, 20 games, 35 strikeouts. Contrast to July, 22 games, 25 strikeouts. So more games, less strikeouts. Batting average goes up from 197 to 233. Slugging goes up 100 points. We've seen him improve throughout the season. The question was just, how is he going to do it against big league pitching? And I feel like he doesn't look overmatched. That's the big thing I always look for a prospect is we understand there's going to, it's a different kind of adjustment when you get to the big leagues, but can you hang in there? Can you look like you belong? And at the plate, he's looked like he's belonged. He struck out a few times. He hit a home run. He hit another base hit. Defensively, he's looked fine, both in the infield and the outfield. I think the best thing to do, let him stay up the rest of the year. Let him play almost every day. You've talked at length, I'm sure, about the lack of power production on this team. So let's see if he can give a spark. Let's see if he can do some of it. So that going into next year, you know exactly what you have in him as he competes for the first base job out of spring training.
I like to see a double digit walk rate, but then I'm seeing at some points, and you mentioned the stat at the beginning of the season, it's gotten better. 30% strikeout rate just cannot fly. That is just something that will sink your major league career really fast. And if you're going to be compared to Todd Helton, one thing you can't do is strike out a lot. I mean, that guy was the king of 12, 13 pitch at bats, and he was able to fight one off there. And I'm curious what it does mean for Tolio when Todd Helton is brought in specifically to work with him this offseason. So is strikeout rate something that is fixable? Is that something that is kind of one of those tools you can work on? I mean, the Rockies just kind of strike out a lot, it seems like, as well.
So you can – it depends why you're striking out. If you strike out looking, that's typically something that we can fix. That's something that you can get better at pitch recognition. We've shown the ability for guys to get better pitch recognition. If you're swinging and missing, that's typically either a pitch recognition issue or something wrong with your swing. Your swing isn't properly suited for big league baseball. Normally, we've worked that out. A lot of his strikeouts, I feel like, it's a swing decision. He sees a pitch, he thinks this is going to be left over the plate, and then it breaks away from him and he misses it. So I think it is something you can fix. I do think we were expecting more fixing between the beginning of the season and now. It has gotten better, but not at the pace we'd like. I like the concept of get a sample size here of 20 or so games, 20 or 30 games at the big league level, and see, let the big league teams you're playing do the scouting for you. Let them figure out the holes in his swing and attack him with it so that you have the offseason to work on those specific things. And a good example, and I'm not doing a comp because I don't like to do comps, but a good example of what I'm thinking about is what the Braves did with Austin Riley. Austin Riley comes up, tearing the cover off the ball. Everybody learns, okay, you can get Austin Riley to chase a slider down and away. And he had a stretch where he wasn't very good, and then he worked on it, and now he's one of the better hitters against sliders and better plate discipline against sliders in baseball. You can improve your awareness of what the pitch is doing. It's just a matter of, like, we need this data. And you have AAA sample size, you have AA sample size, but there's nothing like a big league look. So let him figure out what the issue is. Let him and Todd Helton work on it in the offseason and see what you have next spring. I think he has the inherent quality and skill to get better at the swing and miss and at the strikeouts.
Another prospect I want to talk to you about, someone that's been getting a lot of time here. And I actually do want to hear your thoughts on the feel-good story of the Rockies here. But first, this. Lindsey Crosby, host of Locked On MLB Prospects, joining us. You can find him at Crosby Baseball. You can find the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast as well. I highly, highly recommend that Tuesday episode. We started the show off tonight by talking about the union and the minor leagues. You can go get more details there. Lindsey has been on it and all over. I was lucky enough to get Lindsey on the calendar here late on this Thursday for your Friday pod here. But Eloris Montero for the Colorado Rockies. I got to say, I'm excited. I like his swing. I like what he brings. I finally am seeing something where I'm kind of like, okay, you know, went for, and in terms of the Nolan deal, I've kind of seen enough of Austin Gomber where I don't think that that part of the trade is as valuable. But I'm watching Montero and I'm kind of seeing stuff, and I see the potential of someone who I think can be fast. I really like his approach at the plate, and I like that when given multiple opportunities, a chance to play every day, he's had some sway. He's had some dips, sure, but has looked like a solid ball player so far. I'm curious what you think of Eloís Montero's time in the majors so far.
Well, one, I'm glad he's playing every day now, because when he first got called up, he wasn't playing every day. Yeah. It was very much a waste to me. I'm like, what are you doing? Right. Play him every day or send him back to AAA. Let the kids play. So one, I've been surprised at, and this sounds terrible to say it like this, I've been surprised that he's not been awful at third base. Because a lot of what we would hear is that, oh, he's destined for first base. He's destined for first base. He's destined for first base. And so sometimes when you hear that, it's easy to forget that the difference in being a good defensive third baseman and a great defensive third baseman actually isn't that far. I mean, I would say he's probably average defensively at third base, which is better than we thought he was. Offensively, he hasn't struck out as much against big league pitching as I thought he would. Now he still is right over one strikeout a game. He's not walking a ton. I think he's got, what, two walks in about 33 games or so. So not walking like we thought he would. I almost said never been a super huge walk guy. He had 50 of them last year. It's about a 2-to-1 rate of walks to strikeouts between AA and AAA last year. This year it's a little bit worse. It's like 39-2 or something like that. But we've seen the power come in. You know, 4 home runs so far. Again, slugging .443, not where we thought it would be yet, but this is the adjustment period. I feel like he's acquitting himself well. And I do think you could get away with having him at third if you had a lot of trust in your shortstop next to him.
I'm glad you said that. Let me jump in there. Do you think, here's kind of what, again, I started this season by saying this shouldn't happen. Ryan McMahon should be third baseman for the Rockies. He should be there. Jose Iglesias maybe not comes back, has shown another team's interested next year. I'm kind of thinking the Rockies might be thinking about shifting McMahon over to short, playing Montero every day at third. That's what you're, how else are you going to get Montero in the lineup every day when you still have CJ Cron and Ryan McMahon on your lineup? And now you have Michael Tolia here. And so that impacts, because that also impacts your DH options. If he's going to be playing right field, Tolia, where's Charlie Blackmon going to be? Charlie Blackman's still going to, you know, he's taking a little bit more time. We're seeing Charlie out of the lineup more, but Charlie's still plenty efficient enough of a bat, still plenty good there. Do you see that being a thing? That could Montero potentially be the starting third baseman for the Rockies in 2023?
I think he needs to play third base every day the rest of the season so we can properly answer that. It's something where, and I think part of that too is depending on where does ownership and management think the team is going to be to open 2023. If they see this as, okay, we're going to have, you know, we will finally have a healthy Chris Bryant. You know, we'll have some of our guys here and in place. I'm a little more hesitant to say automatically make him a starting third baseman, but like you said, Tolia can play outfield as well. I think Tolia could play left field. I'd be hesitant to have your left fielder and your right fielder be Blackmon and Tolia with a guy like Randall Grichuk in center versus somebody with a little more speed and range and everything. But if it's me, I'm playing Tolia every day at first. I'm playing Montero every day at third for the rest of the season to try to figure that out. Do we think that he can do it? And again, like you said, it does matter who's at shortstop next to him. I don't know if Ryan McMahon is the best option to be that Hoover on the left-hand side of the infield, but you don't know until you try it. And you have this is the best thing you could possibly ask for is an evaluation window at the big league level where there are essentially no stakes right now. You know, whether he's good or bad, it does not matter. You just need the information. And so play him at third. Let's see if it works out. I think from what I've seen, I think he could be, like I said, with a good, strong defensive shortstop next to him, I think he could be good enough.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting. It's really interesting to see. God, this Spencer Strider guy is really freaking good. Just got himself out of a jam there. We're recording as we're finishing up here. Final question for you here, Lindsay, as we're going to get ready to wrap up. Wynton Bernard, what a story. What a cool moment. I mean, Unfortunately, I know his cup of coffee's already over. It was inevitable he was going to go back down just with this stuff. But how cool is that? How important is it for minor leaguers to see the Bernard story, and how cool for Wynton Bernard? I really do hope that he gets to come back up before the end of the season and finish out the club. It's a tough part of the year when you're balancing your vets and stuff and things of that nature. But I am curious. You're the prospects guy. One of the best stories about the Rockies this year was just that small little thing. Kind of gave Rockies a ton to cheer about. Really good, cool story coming out of the minors there.
Yeah, Kelsey Wingert had a nice feature on the broadcast one day about him with his family and everything there. I love seeing those. I'm not going to call them organizational guys. That's what they are. But I love seeing those guys, those career minor leaguers, the guys who have played out that initial 7-year contract.
10 years, a decade.
I mean, 10 years. Yeah, he's been here since he was 21. He's 31 years old, and he finally made it to the big leagues. If that is it for him, what a way to go. Is finally getting in. My only regret would be that he didn't hit a home run.
Yeah.
But made it in, you know, I think, what was it, 11 singles, one double. You see why it probably took him 10 years to get there, but very happy that he was able to do it. And I was talking to a AAA broadcaster the other day, and he said that the guys, like, they pay attention to things like this. They pay attention to the fact that the organization had other options that they could have gone to. And they said, let's let this guy do it. He's been toiling away for 10 years. Let's give him a chance to play at the big league level. Let's bring his mama in so she can see him play. Let's do all of that. That means a lot to the guys on the farm, because something we always forget about is a lot of those guys don't choose where to play. Right. They're signed or they're drafted by these teams, and they're part of this organization, whether or not they chose it. His 10 years or 7-year contract was up, and he chose to be here, and they rewarded him, and players pay attention to that kind of thing. And as a fan, I loved it. My wife loved the video of him being told he was coming up, right, and seeing him get his first hit and seeing his mom go crazy in the stands. So great story.
Great, great story, and great, great stuff as always from Lindsey Crosby. Your Braves here in the driver's seat against my Rockies here. Really tight race, but I'd say the best race in baseball here going down the stretch there. The NL East, both of those, the Braves and the Mets, chomping at the bit that the fact got to play the Rockies at home there back to back. I'm sure. But for no one better in the business when it comes to prospects, you got to make sure you're following at Crosby Baseball. Lindsey Crosby has been our guest here. Lindsey, anything the folks need to know about coming up on Locked On MLB Prospects here soon?
Wild week next week. It's like, listen, it's 5 days a week, folks. We're talking every system. We're going through all these different things. The top 10 lists. I think next week we're doing top 10 catchers. So if you want to,
There might be a little catcher from this system in there.
I think there might be a catcher from this system in there. So you might want to check that out. But no, just know that your first listen's Locked On Rockies. Make your second listen Locked On MLB Prospects. And every Monday's a mailbag. If you have questions for the show, I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. The show's on Twitter at Locked On Farm. Or you can email us, lockedonmlbprospects@gmail.com.
And we're going to bring Lindsey back more, because I'm seeing Rockies in the top 10 of farm systems now instead of the bottom 10. So that means we still got more to talk about. But unfortunately, we've run out of time for today. For Lindsey Crosby, I'm Paul Holden. You can stay up to date with all things Rockies with me at LO Rockies and at Paul Holden 33. Subscribe to Locked On Rockies and Locked On MLB Prospects on YouTube. Your subscription on YouTube is a massive, massive help to us here on the Locked On Podcast Network. So if you like the show, if you like the videos, make sure that you are hitting that subscribe button, and so you can be part of the show. And folks, until next time, this is Paul Holden saying so long from the Locked On Podcast Network, and so long on the behalf of Lindsey Crosby.